All right, well, tonight's Through the Bible is going to be in 2 Samuel chapters 2 through 4. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a preview of what we're going to cover in these chapters so that maybe you might have a bag to put these things in as we're reading them. Because as we're reading through it, there's going to be things that might not make a whole lot of sense to you. You might wonder, well, why is he doing this? And why is that happening? And rather than, you know, allowing these things to build up in your mind as we're reading it, I thought that maybe I'd give you a little bit of a preview before we hit it. And then afterwards, if we can circle back around. If there's questions, we can address those at that time. But if you remember, David begins to reign in over Judah, and that reign lasts for about 7 years. But he was supposed to be king over all of Israel. But that's not what happens. And this is largely because of Abner, the commander of Saul's army, takes matters into his own hands and assumes the power of setting Saul's remaining sons as king over all Israel, except for Judah, over which David was already king. Now, again, much at the beginning of this reign of David over Judah and then eventually over Israel fails to make a whole lot of sense, unless it's viewed from a particular angle, you know. This Abner character, he manipulated Saul's son and gained power and then turned on him for being insulted later on, which we'll read about. He then believes it is in his power after this little incursion with Saul's son. He believes it's in his power to give the kingdom over to David and so seeks a covenant with David so as to take advantage even still, because this guy's a political opportunist. Abner is. David honors him and accepts his suggestion of a covenant between them as if Abner was the one who was to give Israel into David's reign rather than God. Joab, now another character who we've already seen before, who was a loyal servant of David, who had a brother who had died at the hands of this wicked man, Abner. And so Joab pursued and killed him. Which you would think, well, that's understandable, you know? I mean, that would make sense. And the law would allow that, except for the fact that when this happened, Joab's brother was killed in a war. Well, those are special circumstances. That's not premeditated murder, it's war. So as a result, when Joab pursues Abner and kills him, David then turns on Joab and makes him lament for killing his brother's murderer, and then pronounces a curse on Joab's family, while all the time giving Abner a royal funeral and honoring this wicked man, even singing a song, which kind of casts Joab in a pretty disparaging light. So that's all sordid and messed up as it is. Now, back over there in greater Israel, you still got Saul's son, who Abner turned on, but he's still alive. And two raiding party leaders under Saul's son's authority turns on Saul's son and kills him and brings his head to David, and thinking that, well, David's going to think, well, we did a great thing here because now your rival is dead and you can just assume power over all of Israel. But David winds up killing them for doing this. Now, it seems all the way through this, these first few chapters of David's reign, that he honors the dishonorable and kills those trying to honor him. Now, granted, these men who turned on Saul's son were dishonorable and did wrong, and they should have died for their murder of him. Abner had killed many in his pursuit of power and manipulation of God's people, and yet was honored. You know, it makes sense, though, only if viewed politically, nationally, how things affect a nation at large, rather than how it deals with the smaller stories of individual lives. By David agreeing to meet Abner and deciding over terms, would be one thing. And, you know, it would bring the war to an end. It would work towards a unified Israel and save lives. So, you know, on that level, it's a win-win-win, right? Now, a covenant with a notoriously misguided man like Abner, who, whether known to be so or not by David, was also a wicked political opportunist, is quite another matter. So you got, you know, two sides of this coin. It works out for the better of the national good, but for David to sign a treaty or a covenant with a political opportunist and a misguided man was quite another issue. Now, another political advantage to this move is that no one in a new position of power, like David would be, is loved for killing his way to the top. So David reacted as he did as, reacting as he did, exonerated his house from the guilt of blood of those attached to Saul's continued reign. And the people loved him for having such integrity, but it seems to have come at the cost of morality. Now, finally, David required Michal, his wife, back again, who he'd gotten through Saul. When things got strained between he and Saul, Saul took his wife back and literally ejected David from the kingdom. And so David wanted his wife back after all this, the dust had settled from this. And it makes sense, like again said, from a biblical perspective, and that Michal had literally been David's wife for a while. And it seems unlikely that they had not been intimate during that time period. So after Saul had driven David from the kingdom, Saul gave Michal, who was David's wife, to another man. And this entire time, this man was committing adultery by taking her as if she was his wife. David was simply reclaiming his wife in this. So, I mean, when we get to that part, you'll understand why that's taking place. The fact that this man's heart was broken was his own fault. He should have never taken her as wife in the first place because she really wasn't his. God had joined her to David, and man cannot undo that. This is why this man's entire relationship with Michal was one of habitual adultery with David's wife. And this is something we need to discuss, really, at another time, not today, but because God does not honor, nor does he recognize marriages that we create outside of his laws for marriage, divorce, and remarriage. All such relationships multiply one's sins. And we will deal with that in the future. I believe that it's in the book of Nehemiah where we see this in mass, where upon returning back to Israel, to Jerusalem after Babylonian captivity, a lot of the Jewish people had intermarried with foreign wives. And God said, nope, sorry, that's not going to work. All those women that you married, send them back to their homeland. I don't recognize that marriage, nor do I recognize the children that were produced by that marriage. They all go away. And do it now, which, you know, that was a huge deal. There was nothing small about that, but it is a great illustration of how God's like, you know what? I tell you the right laws for marriage, divorce, and remarriage. You didn't follow them. One of the biggest laws God gave initially at the very beginning to Israel was you will not marry women of foreign ethnicity for outside of Israel. Now, it wasn't a matter so much about them marrying people from another ethnicity. It was people outside of the covenant. If someone had been, a family had been circumcised into the covenant and had become what we might call a pseudo-Jew, well, then the marriage laws would cover that. That would be okay. But to marry a foreigner, the reason why God was against this is because he said, you're the wives of these foreign, these wives who are foreigners, also serve foreign gods, and they'll turn your hearts away from me to serve pagan deities. So that was a primary reason why God had told them not to do that. But I'm getting way ahead of myself. The bottom line is that this Michal was truly married to David. That was her first marriage. She was married to David. They had union. And then when Saul got angry with David and drove him out of the kingdom, he took Michal, who had previously just been his daughter, and gave him to another man. And now that David had assumed authority over both kingdoms, he was asking for his wife back. So when you see this man weeping and crying that he's losing his wife, we need to have in the greater context of knowing how and why that happened. David was just reclaiming what was his own. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and start. Again, we are in 2 Samuel chapter 2 with David anointed as king over Judah. So 2 Samuel chapter 2, starting in verse 1. Sometime later, David inquired of the Lord, should I go to one of the towns of Judah? The Lord answered him, go. Then David asked, where should I go? To Hebron, the Lord replied. So David went there with his two wives. I don't like pronouncing these people's names, but Ahinoam, the Jezreelite, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite. In addition, David brought the men who were with him, each one with his household, and they settled in the towns near Hebron. Then the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. Then they told David, it was the men of Jabesh-Gilead who buried Saul. David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, the Lord bless you, because you have shown this special kindness to Saul, your Lord, when you buried him. Now may the Lord show special kindness and faithfulness to you, and I also will show the same goodness to you because you have done this deed. Therefore, be strong and courageous, for though Saul, your Lord, is dead, the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. Verse 8, Abner, son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Saul's son, Ishbosheth, and moved him to Mahanaim. He made him king over Gilead, Asher, Jezreel, Ephraim, Benjamin, over all Israel. Saul's son, Ishbosheth, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel. He ruled for 2 years. The house of Judah, however, followed David. The length of that time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. Abner of Ner and soldiers of Ishbosheth, son of Saul, marched out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. So Joab, son of Jeruiah, and David's soldiers marched out and met them by the pool of Gibeon. The two groups took up positions on opposite sides of the pool. Then Abner said to Joab, "Let's have this young man get up and compete in front of us." Compete in front of us. "Let them get up," Joab replied. So they got up and were counted off 12 for Benjamin and Ishbosheth, son of Saul, and 12 from David's soldiers. Then each man grabbed an opponent by the head and thrust his sword into the opponent's side so that they all died together. So this place, which is in Gibeon, is named Field of Blades. Verse 17, the battle that day was extremely fierce, and Abner and the men of Israel were defeated by David's soldiers. The three sons of Zeruiah were there. That's Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. Asahel was a fast runner, like one of the wild gazelles. He chased Abner and did not run to the right or to the left in his pursuit of him. Abner glanced back and said, "Is that you, Asahel?" "Yes, it is," Asahel replied. Abner said to him, "Turn to your right or left, seize one of the young soldiers, and take whatever you can to get from you can get from him." But Asahel would not stop chasing him. Once again, Abner warned Asahel, "Stop chasing me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How could I ever look your brother Joab in the face?" But Asahel refused to turn away. So Abner hit him in the stomach with the end of his spear. The spear went through his body, and he fell and died right there. When all who came to the place where Asahel had fallen and died, they stopped. But Joab and Abisha pursued Abner. By sunset, they had gone as far as the hill of Ammah, which is opposite of Gia, on the way to the wilderness of Gibeon. The Benjamites rallied to Abner. They formed a single unit and took their stand on top of a hill. Then Abner called out to Joab, "Must the sword devour forever? Don't you realize this will only end in bitterness? How long before you tell the troops to stop pursuing their brothers?" Verse 27, "As God lives," Joab replied, "if you had not spoken up, the troops would have stopped pursuing their brothers and wouldn't have stopped pursuing their brothers until morning." Then Joab blew the ram's horn, and all the troops stopped. Then they no longer pursued Israel or continued to fight. So Abner and his men marched through the Araba all night, then crossed the Jordan, marched all morning, and arrived at Mahanaim. When Joab had turned back from pursuing Abner, he gathered all the troops. In addition to Asahel, 19 of David's soldiers were missing, but they had killed 360 of the Benjamites and Abner's men. Afterwards, they carried Asahel to his father's tomb in Bethlehem and buried him. Then Joab and his men marched all night and reached Hebron at dawn. Now we're going to chapter 3, starting verse 1. This is where Abner joins David. 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 1. The war between the house of Saul and the house of David was long and drawn out, with David growing stronger and the house of Saul becoming weaker. Sons were born to David in Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon by Ahinoam, the Jezreelite. His second was Chilab by Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite. The third was Absalom, son of Maacah, the daughter of King Talmai of Geshur. The fourth was Adonijah, son of Haggith. The fifth was Shephtai, son of Abital. The sixth was Ithream, by David's wife Eglah. These were born to David in Hebron. During the war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner kept acquiring more power in the house of Saul, because he was a political opportunist, if you remember what we were saying earlier. Now, Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, daughter of Aiah. And Ishbosheth questioned Abner, why did you sleep with my father's concubine? Abner was very angry about Ishbosheth's accusation. Am I a dog's head who belongs to Judah? He asked, all this time I've been loyal to the house of your father Saul, to his brothers, and to his friends, and you haven't handed and haven't handed you over to David, but now you accuse me of wrongdoing with this woman? May God punish Abner, and do so severely, if I don't do for David what the Lord swore to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and establish the throne of David over Israel and Judah from Dan to Beersheba. Ishbosheth could not answer Abner because he was afraid of him. Abner sent messengers at his as his representatives to say to David, whose land is it? Make your covenant with me, and you can be certain that I am on your side to hand all Israel over to you. Now again, see right there, this really wasn't in his power anyway. This was in God's power. But nonetheless, David replied this way in verse 13. David replied, good, I will make a covenant with you. However, there's one thing I require of you. Do not appear before me unless you bring Saul's daughter Micah here when you come to see me. Then David sent messengers to say to Ishbosheth, son of Saul, give me back my wife Micah. I was engaged to her for the price of 100 Philistine foreskins. So Ishbosheth sent someone to take her away from her husband, Paltiel, son of Laish. Her husband followed her, weeping all the way to Barium. Abner said to him, go back. So he went back. Abner conferred with the elders of Israel. In the past, you wanted David to be king over you. Now take action, because the Lord has spoken concerning David. Through my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the power of the Philistines and the power of all of Israel's enemies. Verse 19. Abner also informed the Benjamites and went to Hebron to inform David about all that was agreed upon by Israel and the whole house of Benjamin. When Abner and 20 men came to David at Hebron, David held a banquet for him and his men. Abner said to David, let me now go, and I will gather all Israel to my lord the king. They will make a covenant with you, and you will rule over all you desire. So David dismissed Abner, and he went in peace. Just then David's soldiers and Joab returned from a raid and brought a large number of plundered goods with them. Abner was not with David in Hebron, because David had dismissed him, and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all his army arrived, Joab was informed Abner, son of Ner, came to see the king. The king dismissed him, and he left in peace. Joab went to the king and said, what have you done? Look here, Abner came to you. Why did you dismiss him? Now he's getting away. You know that Abner, son of Ner, came to deceive you and to find out about your activities and everything you are doing. Now, again, Joab had a really good relationship with David. And this is one of the reasons why this whole thing has been a little bit dissettling to me, because Joab had not only been loyal, but he spoke his mind to David. And that's the only place where I can really find a serious flaw in the man, and that sometimes he was a little too candid with his mouth. He might should have shown more respect, seeing that David was king of Israel and God had placed him as king of Israel. And that would be one of Joab's biggest faults. But the other fault, I would say, maybe of Joab, is the fact that after it was clear that David made the decision, whether he agreed with it or not, understood it or not, he should have respected it. I understand he had skin in the game because his brother had been killed by this guy. But nonetheless, you do what is right, and you honor the king, and you honor what you were told. But he didn't. Now, David didn't specifically say something, but nonetheless, he knew that David let him go in peace, and that was the decision of the king. So for him to leave David and go after Abner was sin. It was wrong for him. And I think that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back with David in regard to Joab. So picking up in verse 26, it says, then Joab left David and sent messengers after Abner. They brought him back from the well of Sirah, but David was unaware of it. When Abner returned to Hebron, Joab pulled him aside to the middle of the gateway as if to speak with him privately, and there Joab stabbed him in the stomach. So Abner died in revenge for the death of Asahel, Joab's brother. David heard about it later and said, "I and my kingdom are forever innocent before the Lord concerning the blood of Abner, son of Ner. May it hang over Joab's head and his father's whole house, and may the house of Joab never be without someone who has an infection or leprosy, or a man who can only work a spindle, or someone who falls by the sword or starves." I mean, what a horrible thing. I mean, again, you look at these kind of things with David and you think, you know, this is the guy that's after God's own heart. I mean, what a horrible thing to pronounce over someone who would, I mean, David has to understand that even though Joab was completely wrong in doing this because he was going against the clear decision of the king to let the man go, he was also deeply hurt and wounded because this man had killed his brother. And according to the law, he was well within his rights to be able to kill this man. And for David to pronounce such a horrible judgment over him, it just seems so terrible. But I think that one thing that connects both this seemingly unnecessary and really kind of ungodly thing for David to pronounce over Joab, a previously loyal servant of him, and the fact that he was a man after God's own heart, is the fact that David was a man of passion. David responded to everything with all of his heart. He didn't do anything half-heartedly. When he sinned with all of his heart. When he honored God with all of his heart. And of course, as he progressed in his position of political power, because you need to know, David up to this point had only ruled over Judah, and that only 7 years. Up to that point, he'd spent 20 years of his life running away from Saul, and before that, he'd just been a shepherd. So he has no skills at understanding how to rule and reign, and this is a lot of authority for a fall on what amounts to a 37-year-old man's shoulders, who had no previous authority and previous experience in ruling and reigning over such a vast kingdom, over anything really, other than a handful of men who traveled with him and stuck by his side while he's being pursued by Saul. So it's, you know, in a way, it's understandable that as he continued to grow spiritually into this position as king, you see him being more and more refined, him loving the Lord more and more, and responding with all of his heart. And so it's pretty clear that, at least in my mind, that the fact that David was a man of passion, loved the Lord with all of his heart, he certainly screwed up, but he didn't have the new birth. The Spirit of God was not living on the inside of him. He didn't have a spirit that was alive to God. His spirit was dead spiritually. He was living under the old covenant. He was doing things as best as he understood how, but he still had a love for God. And I got to tell you, on that level, he outshines most Christians, including myself, many times in my life, because I am spiritually born again. My spirit is alive to God. I've got the Holy Spirit living within me. And yet I could see myself doing some of the things in anger that David did. So, you know, I think we have to look through that lens to better understand what's going on. He was spiritually dead. He was not alive to God. He did have a love for God, and he had a Holy Spirit who would visit him and sometimes come upon him, but he did not dwell inside of David because he was dead spiritually. He was under the old covenant. The new birth was not yet available. So I think we have to weigh all these things together and understand that about people before judging them, you know, looking back on them and thinking, gee, I just can't believe that guy did that. This is supposed to be the guy after God's own heart. Well, you know, there's more to the story, you know, and there usually is, especially if we misunderstand Scripture. I promise you, there's more to the story. So anyway, it starts in verse 30 after he pronounces this terrible curse over Joab. It says, Joab and his brother Abishai killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle of Gibeon. And let me say one more thing. I want to qualify something I said earlier. Because it was in war, I really don't know. I spoke out of turn. I said that Joab had a right by the law in order to put Abner to death because he killed his brother. But his brother was killed in battle, and that's different than an outright murder, going in and sneaking in someone's house and stabbing them in the middle of the night. And it would have been handled different in the law. And I'm sorry for that. I let that slip in my mind. I was kind of caught up in trying to find some defense for Joab because, you know, this was his brother. and he's mourning and he's angry, and he doesn't understand the actions of his king, who he's served faithfully and loyally and been an advisor to for years. So it's, you know, so anyway, but yeah, it was in war, and so he probably really didn't have that right. That would have required the okay of the king, because God said before they ever got David as king, before they ever got Saul as king, that whoever you, if you want to have a king instead of having me as your king, then you need to know that the life of every man will be in his hand. That's the authority of the king. So the king could order a man's death, and it was not sin in a lot of cases, unless, of course, it had been, you know, in vengeance or, you know, through retribution or something like that. So, okay, so going on verse 30, it says, David then ordered Joab and all the people who were with him, tear your clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourn over Abner. So to add insult to injury, now Joab, who has killed his brother's murderer, has got to publicly mourn over the death of the man who killed his brother. So this is just really rough stuff. And King David walked behind the funeral procession. When they buried Abner in Hebron, the king wept aloud at Abner's tomb. All the people wept, and the king sang a lament for Abner. Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, your feet not placed in bronze shackles. You fell like one who falls victim to criminals, and all the people wept over him even more. So, I mean, and there, right there in his little song that he sings at his funeral, he essentially calls Joab a criminal. And technically, I guess he was, because he was going against the judgment of the king, but gosh, kind of harsh. Verse 35. And then they came to urge David to eat bread while it was still day, but David took an oath, may God punish me and do so severely if I taste bread or anything else before sunset. All the people took note of this, and it pleased them. In fact, everything the king did pleased them, which speaks to what I was saying earlier. One of the reasons why David acted the way he did with Abner and with all that was going on was because if he had just gone in, because Abner and Ishbosheth had taken the kingdom, and it wasn't given to them. It wasn't theirs. It belonged to David. God had anointed David as king back when he was a shepherd, and he'd been running for his life for 20 years until the death of Saul. So it should have immediately transferred the whole kingdom in David's hands. But instead he was only able to rule over Hebron and Judah for about 7 years before this time period when he's able to start taking over all of Israel. And so, you know, because of that, these guys were political opportunists. They had misused what little bit of authority that they had and stolen authority. Now, God obviously allowed them to do it, because whoever rules does so at God's bidding and God's okay. But the bottom line is that it was God's desire for David to rule as king over all of Israel. And so, you know, when David did take over Israel, instead of putting to death those people, like Abner and Ishbosheth, Saul's son, which would have been a really bad decision, he honored them. The reason why he did it, at least from the vantage point that I can tell, is it was a politically sound decision to do. No one loves a king who comes in and kills all the people who were in the cabinet before him. Starting a rule and a reign as a reign of tyranny and bloodshed doesn't win the hearts of people. It doesn't encourage loyalty. But to honor those people who had gone before him and to show deference to Saul and to Abner like this ingratiated the people. And that was, at least on a political level, a pretty stealthy move. So, again, it says in verse 36, all the people took note of this, and it pleased them. In fact, everything the king did pleased them. Verse 37, on that day, all the troops and all Israel were convinced that the king had no part in killing Abner, son of Ner. Then the king said to his soldiers, you must know that a great leader has fallen in Israel today. As for me, even though I am the anointed king, I have little power today. These men, the sons of Zeruiah, are too fierce for me. May the Lord repay the evildoer according to his deed. Now we're in chapter 4, which is the final chapter. It's a short one. And it covers when Ishbosheth was murdered. Starting in verse 1 in chapter 4 of 2 Samuel. When Saul's son Ishbosheth heard that Abner had died in Hebron, his courage failed, and all Israel was dismayed. Saul's son had two men who were leaders of raiding parties, one named Bana and the other Rechab, sons of Rimmon, the Berothite of the Benjamites. Beroth is also considered part of Benjamin, and the Berothites fled to Gidim and still live there as aliens to this very day. Verse 4, Saul, son of Jonathan, had a son whose feet were crippled. He was 5 years old when the report about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. His nurse picked him up and fled, but as she was hurrying to flee, he fell and became lame. His name was Mephibosheth. Rechab and Bana, the sons of Rimmon the Berothite, set out and arrived at Ishbosheth's house during the heat of the day while the king was taking his midday nap. They entered the interior of the house as if to get wheat and stabbed him in the stomach. Then Rechab and his brother Bana escaped. They had entered the house while Ishbosheth was lying on his bed in his bedroom and stabbed and killed him. Then they beheaded him, took his head, and traveled by way of Araba all night. They brought Ishbosheth's head to David at Hebron and said to the king, "Here's the head of Ishbosheth, son of Saul, your enemy, who intended to take your life. Today the Lord has granted vengeance to my lord, the king, against Saul and his offspring." But David answered Rechab and his brother Bana, sons of Rimmon the Berothite, "As surely as the Lord lives, the one who has redeemed my life from every distress, when the person told me, 'Look, Saul is dead,' he thought he was bearing a bearer of good news, but I seized him and put him to death at Ziklag. This was my reward to him for his news. How much more when wicked men kill a righteous man in his own house on his own bed? So now, should I not require his blood from your hands and wipe you off the earth?" So David gave orders to the young men, and they killed Rechab and Bana. They cut off their heads and their feet and hung their bodies by the pool of Hebron, but they took Ishbosheth's head and buried it in Abner's tomb at Hebron. So that's the bloody start of David's reign. But again, like I said at the very beginning, it seems kind of weird because he's honoring people who were largely dishonorable and dishonoring a man who had been with him from the beginning and had been a great advisor and help to him. But I think that in the end, it does make sense both on a political level and on a moral level in regard to authority inside of God's kingdom, because Joab had taken matters into his own hand, though he clearly knew what David had done. David had let him go, and he knew David had let Abner go. And instead of honoring that decision and questioning David later when he allowed his anger to cool a little bit, instead he just took action right away and killed the man. And, there's a lot of killing going on in all in honor of David, and David would have never killed him because, I mean, the guy that killed Saul thought that he was bringing David good news. But that's not the case, because if David had many times he could have killed Saul, and he didn't, because he wanted to honor God and allow God to put him in the position of being king. He did not want to take the authority. He wanted to allow God to give him the authority and to be inaugurated as king underneath the direct hand of God and peace with the people. And that's what happened. And a lot of people died in the process. But in the end, I think that we see that David did a lot right here. It doesn't always settle with us, right? And I think part of the reason is because we're people who we like our particular variety of justice. We're not really as interested in justice as much as we want feelings of fairness. And the truth of the matter is, what took place here was about as right as it could be made. Life isn't fair. Not everything turns out the way that we would like to see it. And no one says that the story was necessarily the best story, meaning the best way that life could have played out in these scenarios, but it was what it was. People made the decisions that they did, and they had to pay the penalty for those decisions. Now, coming up, we're going to, not tonight, of course, but we're going to have some time looking at Mephibosheth. A special relationship that he wound up having with David, because David continues to honor Saul, even though he's dead, by honoring his sons. And this is just such a beautiful picture. And that's another way in which David is a man after God's own heart, because God does the same thing. Even after people die, God continues to honor them. You notice that, you know, after Abraham and Moses and people like that die, God says, because of my servant Abraham, I will do these things. Because of my servant Moses, I will do. And these are men that had been long buried. They've been dead for a long time. And yet God is still honoring them, though dead, because God's just that kind of a God. He's a God of honor. And man, that just makes me proud to be his son. You know, I mean, honor has always really spoken to my heart very much. And my father was a man who was an honorable man, my physical father. And you know, David was a man of honor, and Abraham was a man of honor, and Noah was a man of honor. You know, Job was a man of honor. All these patriarchs, and not just the patriarchs, the women who were examples of God and live godly lives and lives of faith, like Sarah. And Rahab, who was a harlot, but, you know, she became part of God's people and part of the lineage that led to, David and ultimately to Jesus. These were godly women and also women of nobility and honor. And that's part of the trait of the family of God, is being honorable and continuing to honor people, even when maybe sometimes they don't deserve it. You honor them anyway. And so it's really quite the inheritance that we've walked into by becoming God's children, and because we are to bear his image in all things. And this is something that David definitely had of God's character, and therefore, in my opinion, also made him a man after God's own heart. So anyway, that's it for tonight and through the Bible. And again, we covered 2 Samuel chapters 2 through 4, the beginning of David's reign over all of Israel.